and welcome to another episode of the Mark and Aceto podcast. My name is Mark and Aceto, and finally I'm wrapping up 1966 in my series of history and music. We're going to be doing October through December 1966 on this episode. And it's been a while since I did my last episode, actually. It's been kind of an interesting few weeks for me. Personally, I'm not the scam anybody here. I just tested positive for COVID about a week ago. I tested this past weekend, actually, and just found negative, so that's probably a plus. I would it continues that way. I'm hoping. I'm starting to feel a little bit better. I didn't have many symptoms. I think mainly it was like loss of taste, loss of smell, and maybe I had like a runny nose a little bit. It wasn't too bad. Maybe a little cough, and that was it. Nothing major. But yeah, I mean, it was really, you know, it was kind of stressful. But yeah, you know, I'm on the path of getting better. And my wife got it too, apparently. You know, I think we all got it in the house. So, but we're getting over it, I think. So that's probably a good thing. Let's get started. History of music. October through December of 1966. Wrapping up here. As usual, before I get started, I'm going to read off my sources I used for this particular episode. I used Wikipedia. I used the book Psychedelia, 101 Iconic Underground Rock Albums, 1966 to 1970. By Richard Morton Jack, published in 2017. I use a Beatles anthology book, published in 2000. And I use the book 1966, The Year the Decade It Exploded, by John Savage, published in 2015. There's going to be a lot of sources here I'm going to be reading word for word, which is going to happen, of course. But as long as I set my sources here, you know, I guess I'm good to go. But anyway, let's get started. October through December of 1966, a history and music. October. Reggae singer Roy Richards releases the 45 South Vietnam. Ads are featured in the U.S. Underground Press for an LP titled LSD Underground 12, describing the album as music composed and played by LSD-influenced musicians. It was by a group that originated in California. Magic Mushrooms released the 45 It's a Happening. Terry Knight and the Pack released the 45 Numbers. In 1969, Terry Knight became the producer for the band Grand Funk Railroad. Los Angeles band The Standells released the 45 Why Pick on Me. Northern Ireland's Vim, with new lead singer, piano keyboardist Jackie McGauley, released the 45 Secret Police. The Sons of Adam released the 45 Feathered Fish. Los Angeles garage rock band Love releases the 45 She Comes in Colors, back with Orange Skies. Country singer Waylon Jennings releases his second album, titled Leaving Town. Folk singer-songwriter Tim Buckley releases his self-titled debut album. New York's 11 Spoonful released the 45 Rain on the Roof. British band Cream released their debut 45, the Baroque-inspired Wrapping Paper. The Mighty Hannibal released the 45 Hymn Number 5. San Francisco's The Charlatans released the 45 The Shadow Knows. San Francisco's Big Brother and Holding Company with lead singer Janis Joplin released their debut 45 Always Loneliness, back with Blind Man. New York garage rock band The Blues Magoos released the 45 We Ain't Got Nothing Yet. The song became their most popular track of their career. British band The Impact released the 45 Too Far Out. The bees release the 45 voices, green and purple. The Monacos, a band from Colorado, released the 45 psychedelic. That's where it's at. The Johnny Thompson Quintet, a band hailed from Northern California, released the 45 Color Me Columbus, which was said to be psychedelic. Gurus released the Come Girl, back with Blue Snow Night. Hello. 45. The early raga sound they had can be considered psychedelic. Los Angeles garage rock band The Seeds released their second album titled A Web of Sound. Highlights from the album include Mr. Farmer, Trip Maker, which makes an obvious reference to psychedelic drugs, and the 14-minute, 45-second closer Up in Her Room. The Shadows of Night released their second album titled Backdoor Men. There were a few tracks in the album reflected the psychedelic influence, including the Behemoth, capital Behemoth. Behemoth, I don't know about that. It's okay. Anyway. Interesting. Folk singer Pat Kilway releases the album Light of Day. The album is considered as being folk's first psychedelic album. The album features elements of acid folk, psychedelia, world music, and new age music. In 1963, Kilroy enrolled at the University of California, Berkeley. Already a musician, Kilroy traveled throughout America before being a member of the San Francisco folk scene. Kilroy spent most of his time living in a commune in Big Sur, where he became one of the earliest exponents of what was become as hippie philosophy. Kilroy states of experience of Big Sur, I could feel the pulse of the river's gurgling song in harmony with the rocks and with the treetops' sacred whisper, all blending their holy melodies through each day's cycle. He continues, I listened carefully to the ever-changing consistency of the natural symphony and found peace in the eternal murmurs. In December of 1965, Kilroy asked his friend, fellow Berkeley student Susan Grobard, to join them in New York in hopes to land a record contract for the songs that Kilroy had written. In 2007, Grobard wrote, Patrick was filled with music. He practiced most of the time and wrote new songs on the subway or in the Cafe Reggio, our favorite cafe in Greenwich Village. While in New York, they formed the improvisational trio with the tablet player, Bob Amacher, whom Kilroy befriended while in Big Sur, and the trio was signed to Elektra Records. The album's recording sessions began in January of 1966 and was produced by Peter K. Segal, who had previously made influential early world music. In the spring of 1966, just before the album was about to be completed, it was agreed that Kilroy and Grobard take a break and hike around Europe and North Africa with the intention of developing more material en route. They were able to absorb numerous influences during their travels. They stayed with Elektra's UK head, Joe Boyd, in London, and returned to New York in July. Described by a blatant disregard for commercial considerations, Light of Day veers from fragile folk to screeching blues with fragmented song structures and questing lyrics with which would have been impossible to pigeonhole at the time. Kilroy's liner notes refer to the sturdy work chants of Hebrides Islanders, the lively moods of Spanish gypsies, the magnetic pulsations of African hypnotic drums, and the eerie wave of Middle Eastern dances, along with the as Sufi philosophy and the work of Hesse, Huxley, and Gurdjieff. I don't know how those words are pronounced. Months prior to the so-called Summer of Love in 1967, Kilroy ended with a single word, peace. After the album's release in October of 1966, Crawdaddy magazine printed the following review. I see little reason for bothering with Elektra's recent discovery, Pat Kilroy. He's not a particularly competent singer, and his songs are metacore, mystical, psychedelic poetry set to fairly trite melodies. There are some attempts at Eastern music forms, but they don't succeed very well. Sadly, Light of Day was the only album Kilroy released. Kilroy died of Hodgkin's lymphoma on Christmas Day of 1967 at the age of 24. The Deep released an experimental album, Psychedelic Moods, a mind-expanding phenomenon developed by the band's guitarist and vocalist, Rusty Evans, and vocalist-percussionist Mark Barkin. Evans, a seasoned folk artist, and Barkin, an actor and songwriter who wrote songs for Leslie Gore and Connie Francis, and had recently struck number one with Pretty Flamingo by British band Manfred Mann. The album is meant to be listened to under the influence of LSD. The back of the album cover features a brief text in the way the album should be intended to be heard, as well as a warning stating, "Not recommended for children." The album features the track Psychedelic Moon. And the track list here goes as follows. Side 1. Color Dreams. Pink Ether. When Rain is Black. It's All a Part of Me. Turned On. Psychedelic Moon. Side 2. Shadows on the Wall. Crystal Night. Trip Number 76. Wake Up and Find Me. Your Choice to Choose. On, off, off, on. And this is the album liner notes here on the back. I'm going to read it all here. So, you know, there's a warning on the cover. It says in thick, dark writing on the top right-hand side in the corner and the bottom left-hand corner. Not recommended for children. And this is the notes right here. I'm going to read the notes here. Take a trip. Freak out. Blow your mind. You're on your way to the psychedelic mood. A way of life. A state of mind. Don't take this album lightly. Play it when you're alone, in a dark room. You may find yourself oozy. You may feel as though you're high. You might imagine shadows on the wall. The Deep takes you on a new adventure and sound, an experience you'll never forget. They capture moods that have never been done on record before. Recorded in a pitch black studio at Cameo Parkway in Philadelphia in the wee hours of the morning. Listen to it that way. That hour, and hold on, you're on your way to a new world, a world of the psychedelic mood. And that was written by Neil Bogart, Director of Sales and Promotion, I'm guessing, of Cameo Parkway Records. The album's actually a pretty good album. I heard it before. I used to own the CD of it, remastered. And I heard it before. It's actually a pretty good album. It's weird. You know, it's interesting. I heard it sober. You know, I have taken mushrooms in the past before. I don't know why. If I listened to the album, I definitely felt a bit oozy. I'm not going to lie about that. I mean, it did make you feel a little bit oozy. I think it's just, I don't know, that's what you expect to feel. And it's just your brain thinking, you know, making you feel that way. But I don't know. But whatever. It's worth a check it out if you're into this music. October 3rd, country singer Merle Haggard and the Strangers released their second album titled Swinging Doors and the Bottle Let Me Down. Highlights from the album include Swinging Doors and the Bottle Let Me Down. October 7th, British band The Creation released the 45 Painter Man. October 7th, British band The Hollies released the 45 Stop, 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 which includes a banjo in it. Pretty good song, kind of avant-garde-ish. October 10th, the Beach Boys released the 45 Good Vibrations. The song was characterized by its complex soundscapes, episodic structure, and subversions of pop music formula. It was considered as the costliest record ever recorded at the time of its release. Good Vibrations later became widely acclaimed as one of the finest and most important works of the rock era. The song featured elements of psychedelic rock, psychedelic pop, art pop, acid rock, and ambient pop. October 8th, WOR-FM in New York City becomes the first FM rock music station under the leadership of DJ Murray the K. October 10th, Los Angeles-based band The Monkees released their self-titled debut album. Hits from the album include Theme from The Monkees and Last Train to Clarksville. October 10th, Simon & Garfunkel released their third album, titled Parsley, Sage, Rosemary, and Thyme. There are a total of 12 tracks on the album, 10 of which were Paul Simon compositions. Highlights from the album include Scarborough Fair, Canticle, Homeward Bound, the 59th Street Bridge song, Feeling Groovy, and Dangling Conversation. The closing track is called 7 O'Clock News, Silent Night. The song features headlines from a newscast in the background, with Simon & Garfunkel, of course, singing Silent Night during the song. Some of the stories featured were a dispute in the House of Representatives over the Civil Rights Bill. It is stated that President Johnson had originally proposed a full ban on discrimination for any type of housing, dismissed as having no chance, and that a compromise was painfully worked out in the House of Judiciary Committee. The death of comedian Lenny Bruce from an overdose of narcotics at the age of 42, actually 40. Martin Luther King Jr. reaffirming plans for an open housing march into Cicero, Illinois, a suburb of Chicago. It is stated that Cook County Sheriff Richard Ogilvy urged its cancellation, and that Cicero police plan to ask the National Guard to be called in. The grand jury indictment of Richard Speck for the murder of 9, actually 8, student nurses. Disruption by protesters at a House Un-American Activities Committee hearings into anti-Vietnam War protests. A speech by former Vice President Richard Nixon to the Veterans of Foreign Affairs, Foreign Wars, excuse me, actually to the American Legion, urging an increase in the war effort in Vietnam and calling opposition to the war the greatest single weapon working against the U.S. October 12th, R&B group Supremes released the 45 You Keep Me Hanging on. October 14th, Australian band The Easy Beats released the 45 Friday on My Mind in the U.K. October 15th, British band Pink Floyd and the Soft Machine, British bands Pink Floyd and the Soft Machine played a launch party for International Times at the Roundhouse in London. October 15th, R&B singer Otis Redding releases his fifth album titled Complete and Unbelievable, the Otis Redding Dictionary of Soul. Highlights from the album include Fa 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 Fa, Sad Song, and Try a Little Tenderness. It was his last album before his death. October 17th, Texas band 13th Floor Elevators released their debut album, The Psychedelic Sounds of the 13th Floor Elevators. The album was perhaps the first with the word psychedelic in its title. Elements from the album contain psychedelia, garage rock, folk, and blues. Member Tommy Hall plays an amplified jug. Highlights from the album contain You're Gonna Miss Me, which was the band's only hit, Roller Coaster, Reverberation, Doubt, and Kingdom of Heaven. The album was produced by Leland Rogers, brother of Kenny Rogers. British band Manfred Mann released a 45 semi-detached Suburban Mr. James. It's a mouthful. October 21st, British band The Yardbirds released a 45 Happenings 10 Years Time Ago. It included both Jeff Beck and Jimmy Page on co-lead guitars. It was the last record to feature Jeff Beck as a member. The song has been described as the prototype of heavy metal. October 22nd, Simon & Garfunkel released the Paul Simon composition, A Hazy Shade of Winter. October 22nd, the Supremes album, The Supremes A Go-Go, makes its first all-female group to reach number one on the U.S. Billboard 200. October 24th, R&B singer Stevie Wonder releases the 45, A Place in the Sun. October 28th, British singer Tom Jones releases the 45, Green Green Grass of Home. October 28th, British band The Spencer Davis Group released their biggest hit, Give Me Some Lovin'. October 28th, British band The Kinks released their fourth album titled Face to Face. The album makes a departure from their upbeat British beat music to a more surreal sound containing elements of Baroque. Highlights from the album include Party Line, Dandy, and Sunny Afternoon. October 31st, Netherlands-based band Q65 released the 45, I Despise You. October 31st, Texas garage rock band The 13th Floor Elevators released the 45, Reverberation Doubt, Back to the Fire Engine. October 31st, Pink Floyd records the first version of Interstellar Overdrive in a demo recording studio in Hemel Hempstead. While I was in the middle of the month of August, I mentioned, of course, the Beatles. That was when they performed their last concert in San Francisco, California, at Candlestick Park. And that was it. They were done, never finished touring. So from that point on, from the time they stopped touring until around October, November, whatever, they were doing their own thing at the time. They hadn't released any new music yet since their album Revolver from August, and they were doing their own thing. John Lennon was actually in Spain filming a movie on his own, and this is pretty much what was going on with the four Beatles at the time after they stopped touring in 1966 for a while. John Lennon. We've had enough of performing forever. I can't imagine any reason which would make us do any sort of tour again. We're all really tired. It doesn't mean nothing for us anymore, which is really unfair to the fans. We know, but we've got to think of ourselves. I'm just sorry for people that can't see us live. Sometimes you haven't missed anything because you wouldn't have heard us, but sometimes I think you might have enjoyed it. I'm sorry for them. When we were away from it for a while, it was like the school holidays. You hadn't done any work for a bit, and you just remember the laughs. You quite look forward to it again until you got back and are fed up. It's like the army, one big sameness which you have to go through. One big mess. I can't remember any tours. The music wasn't being heard. It was just a sort of a freak show. The Beatles were the show, and the music had nothing to do with it. And road manager Neil Aspinall says, I went with John to make How I Won the War in the autumn of 1966. While John was filming, I was dressed up as a dead soldier, colored orange in the convention of the film. We went back to Hamburg again because we did some filming on location near there. That was really nice because it was just John and me in Hamburg, without fans or shows or Beatles, and we went round to all their old places and shops. We did it for a day or so, then we got to the train to Paris. We also filmed in Spain during the time. There, John wrote Strawberry Fields Forever on a beach and played it to me. John Lennon. We were in Ave Maria, and it took me 6 weeks to write the song. I was writing it all the time. I was making the film. As anybody knows about film work, there's a lot of hanging around. I have an original tape of it somewhere, or how it sounded before it became the psychedelic sounding song it became on record. As an artist, I always, in the most real moments, try to express myself, to show myself. And not somebody else. If I knew myself less, I could express it less, that's all. In Strawberry Fields, I'm saying, They'll always think it's me and all that bit and help. I was trying to describe myself how I felt, but I wasn't sure how I felt. So I'd be saying, sometimes no always think it's real, but I'm expressing it hauntingly because I'm not sure what I'm feeling. But now I was sure. Yeah, that was what I'm feeling. It hurts that that's what it's about. So then I could express myself. The second line goes, no one I think is in my tree. Well, what I was trying to say is that line is, nobody seems to be as hip as me. Therefore, I must be crazy or a genius. It's the same problem as I had when I was 5. Strawberry Fields was psychoanalyst set the music, really. I think most analysis is just symptomatic. Where you just talk about yourself. I don't need to do that because I've done a lot of it with reporters. I never had time for psychiatrists and those people because they're all cracked. Instead of pending up emotion or pain, feel it. Rather than putting it away for a rainy day, I think everyone's blocked. I haven't met anybody that isn't a complete blockage of pain from childhood, from birth on. Why shouldn't we cry? They tell us to stop crying about 12. Be a man. What the hell is that? Men hurt. Road manager Neil Aspinall here says there had been a big storm during one night. Everything had been washed out to sea and all the roads were really muddy. Then they had all become rutted when it dried. We were coming back from location in John's black Rolls Royce and we had Dylan on the car stereo but switched it over to the tannoy so the song played outside. We were going down the road with Dylan blaring out all over the place. We found out later that everyone called it the carriage of death. For them, the car was like a hearse. As we went over a narrow bridge, a motorbike came around the corner, and the rider saw a big black object looming with music coming out of it. There was a gap between a mountain and a little wall over the bridge, and the motorbike went straight through it. The guy just took off. While John had been in Spain, the others had all been doing their own things. Paul was working on a soundtrack for The Family Way. George was in India. Ringo came to Spain, and John and I were there, so did another guy with a box of chocolates full of marijuana. He opened it and said, Brian and I really packed this well for you. The contents then erupted and went over the floor into a thick pile of carpet. Oh, thank you. Ringo Starr. Towards the end of 1966, with John being in Spain, filming How I Won the War, I went and hung out with him because he was lonely. We really supported each other a lot. Marine and I decided to go out and stay with Michael Crawford, who was with John in the film, and every 5 or 6 days we would move house. All of us were living in the same house, and there was always something wrong with it. That was the most boring part about it, and it was damn hot. In 1965, Marine and I bought a house in Weybridge. John lived out there, and George lived in Esher, which was 5 miles away, so we all ended up in the same area, which was dynamite for me. We had Zach by then, and when we were living in London, we couldn't put him outside. And also, we were a family now, so it was time to move on. We had a building from decorating and remodeling it, and we thought, we'll buy the building firm, and that way they'll really work. And so I went into partnership, and we called the company Bricky Building. And did all the work on my house, thinking it would be less expensive. The foreman used to cook us dinner. And every night. Sorry, I'm off the page here. Every night, because he was the only one who could cook. Marine couldn't in those days. That's how we got the building. But buying the house and doing it was probably the daftest thing I have ever did. I bought it for £37,000, I think. That's what, yeah. which was quite a fortune in those days, but it had cost me £90,000 by the time we finished it, and we sold it for £47,000. And the other part about the boating firm was that we did some work for George Harrison, who still hasn't paid the bloody bill. I really enjoyed having time off in 1966. Okay, that's it for the touring. Let's have fun with my wife and child. I now have time to do other things. John Lennon. I was always waiting for a reason to get out of the Beatles from the day I made How I Won the War in 1966. I just didn't have the guts to do it, you see, because I didn't know where to go. I remember why I made the movie. I did it because the Beatles had stopped touring and I didn't know what to do. Instead of going home and being with the family, I immediately went to Spain with Dick Lester, because I couldn't deal with not being continually on stage. That was the first time I thought, my God, what do you do if this isn't going on? What is there? There's no life without it. And that's when the seed was planted and that I had to somehow get out of this without being thrown out by the others. I could never step out of the palace. Excuse me. Because it was too frightening. I was really too scared to walk away. I was thinking, well, this is the end, really. There's no more touring. That means there's going to be a blank space in the future. Sometime or other, that's when I really started considering life without the Beatles. What would it be? And I spent that 6 weeks thinking about that. What am I going to do? Am I going to be doing Vegas, the cabaret? I mean, where do you go? So that's when I started thinking about it. But I could not think what it would be or how I could do it. I didn't even ever consider forming my own group or anything because it didn't enter my mind just what I do when it stopped. Paul McCartney. John's now trying acting again and George has got his passion for the sitar and all the Indian stuff. He's lucky, like somebody's luck. Who's got religion. I'm just looking for something I enjoy doing. There's no hurry. I have the time and the money. George Harrison. I went to India in September of 1966. When I had first come across the record of Ravi Shankar's, I had a feeling that somewhere I was going to meet him. It happened that I met him in London in June at the house of Anya Deva and Gotti, founder of the Asian Music Circle. An Indian man had called me up and said that Ravi was going to be there. The press had been trying to put me and him together since I used the sitar, a Norwegian wood. They started thinking a photo opportunity, a Beatle with an Indian. So they kept trying to put us together. And I said no, because I knew I'd meet him under the proper circumstances, which I did. He also came around to my house, and I had a couple of lessons from him on how to sit and hold the sitar. So in September, after touring, and while John was making How I Won the War, I went to India for about 6 weeks. First, I flew to Bombay and hung out there. Again, because of mania, people soon found out I was there. I stayed in the Victorian Hotel at Taj Mahal. I was starting to learn the sitar. Kashmiri fellow Mr. Butt would bring us tea and biscuits, and I could hear Ravi in the next room practicing. After I had LSD, a lingering thought stayed with me, and the thought was the yogis of the Himalayas. I don't know why it stuck. I had never thought about them before, but suddenly this thought was in the back of my consciousness. It was as if somebody was whispering to me, yogis of the Himalayas. That was part of the reason I went to India. Ravi, the sitar were excuses, although they were a very important part of it, and it was a search for a spiritual connection. Ravi had a really sweet brother called Raju, or Rahu, I don't know, who gave me a lot of books by wise men, and one of the books, which was by Swami, I don't even pronounce that last name, said, "There's a God, we must see him. If there's a soul, we must perceive it. Otherwise, it's better not to believe. It's better to be an outspoken atheist than a hypocrite." All my early life, they tried to bring me up as a Catholic, but I wasn't really into that. The whole Christian attitude, and I say Christian in inverted commas because there is a lot of people who represent themselves as Christians who don't really, to my mind, have the franchise on Christ, and they are not necessarily representative of what he was trying to say, seem to be telling you to believe what they're telling you and not have the direct experience. For me, going to India and reading somebody saying, "No, you can't believe anything until you have direct perception of it," which was obvious, really, made me think, wow, fantastic. At last, I found somebody who makes some sense, so I wanted to go deeper and deeper into that. That's how it affected me. I read books by various holy men and swamis and mystics and went around and looked for them and tried to meet some. You can see them in India. It's unbelievable. You can go down the street and there's somebody driving a bus or a taxi or riding a bicycle, and there's a chicken and a cow and someone in a business suit with a briefcase and an old with a saffron robe all mixed together. It's an incredible place with layers and layers and layers of sounds and colors and noises, and it's all, and it all bombards your senses. It was amazing then. I felt as if I was back in time. It was the first feeling I ever had of being liberated from being a beetle on a number. It comes back to The Prisoner with Patrick McGoohan. I am not a number. In our society, we tend to be a subtle way to number ourselves and each other, and the government does so too. "What's your social security number?" is one of the first things they ask you in America. To suddenly find yourself in a place where it feels like 5000 BC is wonderful. I went to the city of Benares, where there was a religious festival going on called the Ramalila. It was out on a site of 300 to 500 acres, and there were thousands of holy men there for a month-long festival. During this festival, the Maharaja feeds everybody, and there are camps of different people, including the saddest Renaissance in England, in Europe, or the West. These holy men would be called vagrants and be arrested, but in a place like India, they roam around. They don't have a job, they don't have a social security number, they don't even have a name, other than collectively, they're called Sanitizers, and some of them look like Christ. They're really spiritual, and there are also a lot of loonies who look like Allen Ginsberg. That's where he got his whole trip from, with the frizzy hair and smoking little pipes called chillums and smoking hashish. The British tried for 4 years to stop Indians smoking hashish, but they've been smoking it for too long for it to be stopped. I saw all kinds of groups of people, a lot of them chanting, and it was a mixture of unbelievable things, with the Maharaja coming through the crowd on the back of the elephant with the dust rising. It gave me a great buzz. Paul McCartney. If you are blessed with the ability to write music, you can turn your head hand to various forms. I've always admired people for whom it's a craft. The great songwriting partners of the past, such as Rodgers and Hammerstein or Cole Porter, I've admired the fact that they can write a musical so they can do a film score. So film scores were an interesting diversion for me. If George Martin being able to write and orchestrate and being pretty good at it. I got an offer through the Bolton Brothers from him, and me to do some film music for The Family Way. I had a look at the film and thought it was great. I still do. It's very powerful and emotional, sobby but good for its time. I wanted brass band music because with the Beatles we got into a lot of different kinds of music. But maybe brass band was a little too northern and hovis. I still loved it. My dad had played trumpet and his dad had been in a brass band, so I had those leanings. For the film, I got something together that was sort of brassy bandy to echo the northernness of the story, and I had a great time. We got an Ivor Novello Award for the score for the best film song that year, a piece called Love in the Open Air, which Johnny Mercer was nearly going to put lyrics to. But I didn't know who he was. Later I realized, all that Johnny Mercer. You mean the greatest lyricist on the planet. I shouldn't have done that. Never mind. It fell through, but it was good. Fun doing the music. So yeah, it was a soundtrack release in 1967. I think it was early or late 66. So the soundtrack didn't have any way yet. Paul McCartney wrote the music too. November. Los Angeles band The Association releases their 45 Pandora's Golden Heebie Jeebies. Okay. The Beatles began recording what was to become their next album. Shadows of the Night released the 45 I'm Gonna Make You Mine. The Blue Things released the 45 The Orange Rooftop of Your Mind, backed with 1 Hour Cleaners. Keith releases the 45, 98.6. The Young Hope Trio releases the 45, Whack Whack. San Francisco-based band The William Penn 5 released the 45, Blow My Mind, backed with Swami. The B-side, Swami, was considered one of the earliest psychic hippie parody songs. Question Mark and the Mysterians released the 45, I Need Somebody. The Perpetual Motion Workshop released the 45, Won't Come Down, back with Infiltrate Your Mind. Both the A and B side contain obvious psychedelic themes. The Darlings, a band from upstate New York, released the 45, Bad Trip. San Francisco's Jefferson Airplane begins recording their second album, Surrealistic Pillow, that contains a good amount of psychedelic material. On that note, Jefferson Airplane had gone through some lineup changes prior to the recording. Grace Slick, who was previously in the band The Great Society, joined as vocalist, replacing Sing Tully Anderson. Spencer Dryden joined as drummer, replacing Skip Spence. The Spike Drivers released the 45, Baby Won't You Let Me Tell You How I Lost My Mind. Excuse me. The Human Expression releases the 45, Every Night, back with Love at Psychedelic Velocity. The Sabbath Camel released the 45, Hello, Hello. The Oxford Circle released the 45, Foolish Woman. Garage rock band The Electric Prunes released the 45, I Had Too Much to Dream Last Night. The song was the band's only hit. It was known for the opening guitar riff that sounded like a bee buzzing. San Francisco garage rock band The Other Half released the 45, Mr. Pharmacist. Many people thought the song was by the Yardbirds due to the similarities of lead vocalist voice of both bands and its blues-like influence. As the end of this band, Buffalo Springfield releases the 45, Burned. Garage rock band Question Mark and the Mysterians released the album, 96 Years. Los Angeles band The Association released the second album, Renaissance. Highlights from the album include I'm the One, Pandora's Heebie Jeebies, Looking Glass, and No Fair at All. garage rock band Love releases their second album called The Cabal. Highlights from the album include Stephanie Knows Who, Orange Skies, 7 and 7 Is, The Castle, She Comes in Colors, and the 18-minute, 57-second side 2 filler, Revelation. New York's 11 Spoonful releases their third album, called Hums of 11 Spoonful. Highlights on the album include Loving You, Darling Companion, Full Measure, which was lead sung by the drummer Joe Butler, Rain on the Roof, Nashville Cats, and the smash hit Summer in the City. New York's The Blues Project released their second album, overall their first studio album, titled Projections. The album contains elements of blues rock and psychedelic rock. Highlights include I Can't Keep From Crying, Steve's Song, Flute Thing, and Wake Me, Shake Me, which Al Kooper performed as a solo artist at the Monterey International Pop Festival in June of 1967. In the spring of 1967, vocalist keyboardist Al Kooper left the Blues Project due to musical differences. New York garage rock band the New York garage rock band the Blues Magoos released the album Psychedelic Lollipop. During the fall prior to the album's release, Hit Parader magazine wrote an article about the Blues Magoos and said they look like an explosion in a fireworks factory, adding, they don't play mere rock and roll. They call their music total recreation or psych out, and it's as wild and outrageous as their name and their appearance. Young kids of the day knew the type of recreation the band was referring to. The band was definitely into LSD as well as opium. The following issue of Hit Parader had an interview with an unnamed member of the Blues Magoos, and he stated, "We have many build-ups during a song. Most groups would use these as introductions to a song. We play them in the middle. It really flips people out. We're getting a new sound system so we can make even wilder sounds. We found a place that sells the emergency siren used on police and ambulances. We want to use it on our introductions and endings and make them excruciating loud." They had a superb light show as well. In an interview with Mojo Navigator in October of 1966, drummer Jeff Daking commented, "If you stand in one corner of the room and look at the whole thing, everything complements the other thing. The band complements the lights. The people appear as though they're swinging back and forth in the strobe light, and you're supposed to take it all at once." Not all club owners responded favorably to the band's music. As the band stated, "We don't care how many clubs we get thrown out of or how much money we miss out on. We're playing a new and different kind of music, and we'd rather fight than switch." Highlights from the album include the smash hit We Ain't Got Nothing Yet, Love Is Doomed, which features some trippy guitar effects, the moody Sometimes I Think About, and the garage pop tune One by One. The trippy album cover of Psychedelic Lollipop was created by guitarist Mike Esposito. The album's liner notes include the following text: "To truly get the best audio fidelity pleasure, it is suggested that this record be played at high volume." November 2nd, the R&B group Temptations released the 45, I Know I'm Losing You. November 4th, Fleur de Lis released the 45, Mud in Your Eyes. November 7th, R&B singer Wilson Pickett releases the 45, Mustang Sally. November 8th, the Premier is a band from Los Angeles, released their only psychedelic record, Get On This Plane Back With Come On and Dream. November 9th, R&B singer Aaron Neville releases the 45, Tell It Like It Is. November 9th, John Lennon meets Yoko Ono while attending a preview of her art exhibit at the Indica Gallery in London. November 11th, British band The Small Faces released a 45, My Mind's Eye. November 11th, British band The Who released the EP titled Ready, Steady, Who. Highlights from the EP include the Pete Townshend composition, Disguises, a cover of the Batman theme, and a cover of the Regents, Barbara Ann, which The Who's version follows closely to the Beach Boys' version. November 14th, R&B singer Otis Redding releases the 45, Try a Little Tenderness. November 16th, R&B singer Stevie Wonder releases his 6th album titled Down to Earth. The album features the hit A Place in the Sun. November 18th, British band The Kinks released the 45 Dead End Street back with Big Black Smoke. November 18th, Frank Sinatra releases the album That's Life. The track That's Life became a top 5 hit in the pop rock dominated chart. November 22nd, Stevie Wonder releases the 45 Someday at Christmas. November 23rd, The Monkees released the 45 I'm a Believer back with Unlight Your Stepping Stone. I'm a Believer was a Neil Diamond composition. November 25th, British band Alan Pounds Get Rich releases the 45 Searching in the Wilderness. November 28th, R&B group The Four Tops released the 45 Standing in the Shadows of Love. November 28th, Paul Revere and the Raiders released their 6th album titled The Spirit of 67. Highlights include Good Thing and Hungry. The album contains several tracks that feature a psychedelic influence. November 30th, British band The Yardbirds make the official announcement that guitarist Jeff Beck had left the band, making Jimmy Page the sole lead guitarist for the band. December, The Left Banke releases the 45 Pretty Ballerina. Cream releases the 45 I Feel Free. The Fugs release the 45 Kill for Peace. The Velvet Underground releases the 45 Sunday Morning back with Femme Fatale. The Freaks of Nature released the 45 People Let's Freak Out. Los Angeles based band The Grains of Sand released the 45 Going Away Baby back with Golden Apples of the Sun. The B-side Golden Apples of the Sun is considered a weird and psychedelic. The Misunderstood releases the 45 I Can Take You to the Sun. The Seeds released the 45 Mr. Farmer. Rainy Days released the 45 That Acapulco Gold back with In My Mind Lives a Forest. Mick Softly with The Summer Suns released the 45 Am I the Red One? Terry Randall releases the 45 SOS. December 2nd, David Bowie releases the 45 Rubber Band back with the London Boys. December 2nd, Marvin Gaye and Kim Weston release the 45 It Takes Two. December 3rd, British band The Who releases the 45 Happy Jack. December 5th, Los Angeles Buffalo Springfield releases their self-titled debut album. Highlights from the album include Go and Say Goodbye, Nowadays Clancy Can't Even Sing, and Burn. December 6th, while the Beach Boys were recording the sessions for the Brian Wilson project Smile, overdubs were being placed on the track Cabin Essence. A climactic argument occurred between member Mike Love and third-party lyricist Van Dyke Parks, causing him a distance away from the project. December 9th, British band The Troggs released the 45 Any Way That You Want Me. December 9th, Birmingham, England's The Move released the 45 Night of Fear backed with Disturbance. December 9th, British band The Hollies released their 5th UK album titled For Certain Because. Highlights from the album include What's Wrong With The Way I Live, Clown, and Stop, Stop, Stop. December 9th, British band Cream releases their debut album, titled Fresh Cream. Highlights from the album UK release include NSU, Sweet Wine, Spoonful, I'm So Glad, and the instrumental Toad. The US release excludes Spoonful and features I Feel Free as its replacement. The album is one of the greatest debuts released by the trio of Eric Clapton, Jack Bruce, and Ginger Baker. December 9th, British band The Who releases their second album, A Quick One. As opposed to their debut album, the album features elements of Baroque. Guitarist Pete Townshend, who is still the primary songwriter, however, A Quick One includes songs written by all four members. Highlights from the album include Run, 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 bass guitarist John Entwistle's composition, Boris the Spider, drummer Keith Moon's composition, I Need You, John Entwistle's Whiskey Man, a cover of Martha Vandellas' Heat Wave, Keith Moon's instrumental, Cobwebs and Strange, lead singer Roger Daughtry's composition, See My Way. The album's closer was the Pete Townshend composition, the 9-minute, 10-second, a quick one while he's away, which was a short musical suite which was an inspiration to future rock operas that Pete Townshend came up with. It was sort of a mini operetta, opera type thing. December 16th, the Jimi Hendrix Experience releases their debut 45, Hey Joe. December 17th, David Oppenheim films Brian Wilson at his home performing his composition of Surf's Up. The captured footage was later used for CBS's Inside Pop, The Rock Revolution, which was aired on April of 1967. In April of 1967, excuse me. December 23rd, Buffalo Springfield releases their most popular hit, For What It's Worth, Stop, Hey, What's That Sound? December 23rd, the British satirical magazine Private Eye gives away a flexi disc titled The BBC Gnome Service for its Christmas issue that featured a ditty by Peter Cook called Psychedelic Baby. December 23rd, the UFO Club opens in London's Tottenham Court Road. Pink Floyd and the Soft Machine were among the performers that evening. And that's a wrap from 1966. Took a lot of time doing this one. By the way, I appreciate all y'all listening out there. Hopefully you enjoyed it. I'm going to do 1967 next, the Summer of Love. Probably the most popular year of the whole era that I'm doing here. But I don't know. I beg to differ on that in some ways. I don't know. I never really thought of it that way before. But it should be interesting. And also, my next podcast, I'm going to be doing two, which is going to be part one of 1967. Because it's probably going to take multiple parts to complete it. I'm going to do my podcast on YouTube. So, hopefully, if you guys like going on YouTube, you can catch my video of that podcast. So, I hope it works out okay. It's my first time doing this. So, I hope it works out. Anyway, thank you for tuning in. The Mark Anastito Podcast. An Anchor podcast. Until we meet again, good night and God bless. Thank you.